It doesn't take much to see that our Canadian culture is cozying up to death. The abortion law was struck down in 1988. Canadians have had unhindered access to the killing of babies in the womb, and our fellow citizens are comfortable with it. And now, just a few months ago, our Supreme Court struck down the law against assisted suicide. If we want to die badly enough, we should be helped to die in as humane a way as possible. That's also pretty cozy with death.
On the feature today, an edited version of the homily delivered at the Reformed Prayer Service that was part of the National March for Life in Ottawa. On the news, we'll give you some insight into where consistency in the pro-choice camp ultimately leads. Also, ARPA has been granted legal standing in a case in BC, another one surrounding the Trinity Western Law School case, and a response to an attempt in Ottawa to reopen the debate about the legality of corporal punishment, spanking, under the Canadian Criminal Code.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
ARPA will be part of yet another legal case surrounding accreditation for the proposed law school at Trinity Western University. You'll recall that earlier this year, ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten was part of the winning side in a Nova Scotia case. That province's law society had declared it would not allow any potential graduates of the law school at Trinity Western to practice in that province. The whole thing, of course, stems from the university's so-called community covenant, which asks students to commit to engaging in sexual activity only within the confines of heterosexual marriage. The school, the accusation goes, is discriminating against homosexuals with that policy. The Nova Scotia case is going to appeal, but there's two other provinces where law societies have issued similar edicts, Ontario and BC. And last week, ARPA was given standing as an intervener in the legal case in BC. Schutten says, really, his argument isn't going to be much different than the one that won the day in Nova Scotia.
Advancing the same argument that the state may not, cannot discriminate against Christians by limiting their access to this public square, access that all kinds of other people have, namely the ability to practice law in Canada in the various provinces. The fact that we're Christian, the fact that we hold to a biblical definition of marriage, among many other things, should not preclude us from practicing law in the public square.
There's another potential hurdle in BC as well. Even if the Law Society's edict against Trinity is overturned, the Advanced Education Ministry, which accredits all colleges and universities as degree-granting institutions, has said it will not accredit the new law school. However, Schutten says that case may become moot if the courts issue a clear ruling against the Law Society. The province would likely have to reverse itself on the accreditation question. Meantime, the federal government also got involved in the Trinity case again last week, inserting itself into both the BC and Ontario court challenges.
The Attorney General of Canada has a right in law to intervene in any constitutional challenge in any province at any time. And so the federal government has taken upon itself the responsibility to intervene in this matter. They did in Trinity Western, Nova Scotia back in December, and they're intervening in both Ontario and BC as well. And the argument that they are advancing is simply that the old Trinity Western case that the Supreme Court decided in 2001, which is not that long ago, they're arguing that that is still good law and it's unreasonable for a law society, apparently the upholders of the practice of the law, it's unreasonable for them to disregard that decision and to ban graduates from this law school for practicing law in the various provinces.
The date for the hearing on the Law Society case has been set for August 24th. A Liberal member of Parliament is trying to reopen the discussion on whether parents should be allowed to administer corporal punishment, whether they should be allowed to spank their children. Vancouver's Joyce Murray raised the issue in the House earlier this month, calling it, quote, a cruel form of punishment, and calling Section 43 of the Criminal Code an archaic flaw in our legal system. The speech prompted ARPA's Executive Director, Mark Peniga, to put pen to paper and write an op-ed piece that was published in the Vancouver Sun and several other newspapers. Peniga says the column focused on two things, starting with some empirical research on the role of discipline in child rearing.
We first step back and answer the question of, okay, is all physical discipline harmful or abusive? And by answering that question, I first look at what has previous research shown. And most of the studies that get the coverage, when you look at the actual research, it lumps together any sort of physical, not just discipline, but also abuse. Everything from grabbing and shoving, slapping, punching. And then it looks at the effects of those things, and it's no surprise that you'd see negative outcomes, of course. Nobody, I would hope, would ever want to support or encourage anything like punching or slapping. That's totally inappropriate. So it's no surprise then that the research shows that it doesn't have good outcomes. But then that's all that gets covered. So has any research been done that actually looks at just physical discipline done properly? And by properly, I'd say done in accordance with what the Bible shows us as appropriate, and also that the Supreme Court said is legal in Canada. And there has been some research. It's been very extensive, and it's concluded that when physical discipline is done within the parameters of Canadian law, the results are as good as or better than all other forms of discipline. So we have some solid research that defends physical discipline when it is administered properly.
Mark says there's a second part to this discussion as well.
Regardless of what the research shows, a fundamental question we also need to answer is, what is the role of the state when it comes to determining what is proper for the raising up of children? And what is the role of the family or parents? So in this article, I also make the case that the role of the state's limited to preserving an orderly society, and that includes punishing wrongdoers such as real child abusers, and that other institutions of society such as the family have their own authority, have their own also responsibility, and in particular parents are entrusted with the authority to lovingly raise their children. And the state can't interfere with that except in exceptional circumstances such as real child abuse.
The op-ed repeats many of the points that ARPA first made in a submission to Parliament just over 2 years ago. We link to that report on our homepage. It's been a few weeks now since the big March for Life in Ottawa. Tens of thousands of pro-lifers showed up, along with a few dozen folks from the other side, including some from the Radical Femen group. Women who showed up, some bare-breasted, to hurl abuse at the pro-life marchers. But one guy got a fair bit of attention, first for what he said, and then for trying to take it back. First of all, to what he said. It was an interview with Marissa Semkew from Rebel Media. She stuck a microphone in this guy's face and asked him a fairly logical and reasonable question. But listen to where the interview goes when the man being interviewed tries to remain consistent to his worldview.
Certainly there are people at this march that would like to see it completely criminalized, but there are also other people at the march that would like to see it criminalized up to a certain point. You know, like, how about a month before a child's born? Is that fine?
Which is understandable, yeah.
Oh, you think there should be restrictions on?
I'm kind of digging my own grave here. It should be the woman's decision to make
this
that choice no matter what, period. Now, if that means taking action up to a month, before the child is born, that should be her decision.
How about a week?
A week? That's her decision again.
How about a day?
Also her decision. It's not for me or any member of parliament or religious organization to tell her otherwise.
How about postnatal abortion?
Postnatal abortion? If that's the option, then that's the option. But again, I'm not advocating murder of any kind. It's not my choice.
Rebel Media did not identify the man, but the clip has gone viral. The reason they didn't identify him? He later sent an email to the organization, asking them not to use his image or the interview in any capacity. But, as Semkew said in the piece, the man chose to be quoted as a self-appointed representative of the pro-choice movement on Parliament Hill during the National March for Life, and consented to be filmed espousing his particular views. Back with more after this.
Last December, the We Need a Law campaign learned about the tragic death of Cassandra Cake and her preborn daughter, Molly. At 7 months of pregnancy, Cassie was murdered and both her and Molly died. Since Canada does not recognize preborn children as humans under the law, there will never be justice for Molly. We Need a Law has a petition calling on members of Parliament to enact a preborn victims of crime law. You can print off this petition at weneedalaw.ca under the Molly Matters heading from the menu on the front page.
On the feature today, we're bringing you a somewhat shortened version of the homily, the sermon that was delivered at the Reformed Prayer Service that preceded the National March for Life in Ottawa earlier this month. The speaker was Reverend Peter Holtfleur from the Spring Creek Canadian Reformed Church in Tintim, Ontario. His homily was based on Mark 5, the story of the demon-possessed man in the Gerasene tombs.
It doesn't take much to see that our Canadian culture, like the rest of the Western world, is cozying up to death more and more. Maybe that sounds a little strange, a little oxymoronic. How could anybody cozy up to something like death? And yet, when we look back on the fact that the abortion law was struck down in 1988 and see what's transpired since then, during that time, Canadians have had unhindered access to the killing of babies in the womb, so much so that statistics show at least 100,000 babies are murdered each year, and our fellow citizens are comfortable with it. They want it. They like it. That's cozy with death. And now, just a few months ago, our Supreme Court struck down the law against assisted suicide. This is about life on the other end of the spectrum, when someone who is suffering and is able to speak for themselves voices the wish to die. Such people should not only be allowed to die, says our court, but assisted to die. The court seems to be reflecting some measure of public opinion. If we want to die badly enough, we should be helped to die in as humane a way as possible. That's also pretty cozy with death. And that's quite a change. There was a time, not that long ago, when death was disdained in all its forms and life was treasured. Now death seems to be welcomed and sought out as an escape, and life is no longer considered a gift from God to be valued and protected. Well, how strange and contradictory this is to the way of our Savior, Jesus Christ. He came to this world to do the very opposite, to save life, not destroy it. He came to bring life, even in the midst of death. A message that we see so clearly in Mark 5. Jesus and his disciples no sooner cross the Sea of Galilee than they are met, we read, by a man with an unclean spirit. A demon lived in him. From other parts of the Bible, we know that demons are fallen angels who serve Satan. They are his soldiers. And Mark tells us three times, so that we do not miss it, that this demon-possessed man lived among the tombs. He felt at home in the cemetery, cozy among the dead. This man, he is free to do whatever he wants. He's free to go wherever he wants, filled with a legion of powerful demons. But where he wants to go is among the tombs. What he wants and likes is death. What Satan did to that one man, he is now in the process of doing to our entire culture. Unborn babies are delivered to death, and it's just brushed away as nothing more than a matter of non-human cells, or certainly non-living cells. More and more suffering adults are not encouraged, they're not helped to live and flourish, but they are encouraged to give up and die. Our own Canadian citizens, citizens of the country we love, and we're likely going to meet some of them this morning shouting at us as we march for life, they are so blinded by the evil one that they fight vigorously for their right to kill their very own babies. They can't see how ludicrous that is, let alone the injustice of it. They believe they are for life, but in fact, they are for death. A little bit earlier in Mark 4, we read that it was Jesus' idea to get in that boat, cross the sea. He had a destination in mind. He had an appointment with this demoniac. Only the demoniac didn't know it. And when Jesus reaches him, what does he do? He releases him from that slavery.
He bursts forth light into that man's perma-darkness. That's what the Lord does. That's what our Savior came to earth to do, to release the chains that the devil has on people and destroy his work. Jesus came to bring life. And did you notice how the life and the condition of this former demoniac changed radically? We're told that a crowd from a nearby village came out and they saw this ex-crazy man at the feet of Jesus. In his right mind, not blinded or led by the devil any longer, not wanting to live in the graveyard, but guided by the Creator and the Savior of the world, sitting at his feet, soaking up the words of life. This is a picture of Jesus' work and Jesus' goal. Unlike Satan, he has a total love for life, and he works to restore human beings to a noble and dignified life, the same way that the Lord created us in the beginning. Christ loves life so much that he willingly gave himself up to death. Jesus suffered the full penalty that we had brought upon ourselves in Adam because of our rebellion, so that we could be transformed from rebellious enemies into sons and daughters of our Father in heaven. And if Jesus could do that for you and me while he was on this earth, just think what he can do now as ascended King on high in heaven. He can certainly affect that change in the hearts of our fellow Canadians who don't see it that way at this time. His Father has given to him at his ascension all authority in heaven and on earth. And he has sent forth his Spirit, and that Spirit has the power to open closed hearts. If we do meet people this morning who are blind to the culture of death around us, just remember the power of our Savior to expel a legion of demons. Remember his mercy in tracking down one lonely demoniac among the tombs across the sea. Remember the grace that King Jesus used in changing you and me. I once was lost, now I'm found. I once was blind, but now I see.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Production Manager Brian Grimm. Technical Director Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.